is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM. WSBT.
Martin for three. Got it!
The Clay Colonials win the state championship.
Notre Dame has beaten number one BC. Over the board come the Irish.
Cubs win.
Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske win the Daytona 500.
The Stanley Cup to the Chicago Blackhawks.
The Irish is upset. Florida State. Notre Dame is number one.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Well, good evening, everyone. Budweiser's weekday sports beat is ready to roll. For this Thursday night, I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Tonight is game one of a four-game series between South Bend and the Tin Caps, the Midwest League affiliate of the San Diego Padres. South Bend starts tonight in first place along with West Michigan with records of 12-8 in the Eastern Division. Fort Wayne at 7-13. First pitch tonight at 7:05. Jordan Automotive Group pregame show. At 6:50, it's a little cool, a little overcast, a little windy here in Fort Wayne. Eric Hansen back in our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. He is prepared for the National Football League draft tonight getting underway, and that is one of our focuses. What in the world is going to happen tonight? DeShone Kizer, will he be taken in round number one? Well, earlier today on WSBT Radio, the Dan Patrick Show was heard from 9 to noon, and DeShone was a guest on the Dan Patrick Show. We're going to bring you that entire interview coming up in just a few moments. Our program brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Harold Ziegler, Ford Lincoln and Elkhart. 2525 Bypass Rotor at zford.com and by Legacy Heating and Air. Eric, how are you?
A strange change in temperature here. I'm doing very good.
Not too happy about that, but we'll do the best with what we have going on right now. We've got a lot of rain in the forecast this weekend here in Fort Wayne, so I have a feeling I'm going to be doing a lot of sitting, unfortunately, and not a lot of talking. Well, I'm prepared for anything tonight. I've got the Tin Caps and the Cubs in front of me live. I have my iPad on a baseball game right now, and I've got my computer ready for the NFL draft to see if DeShone Kizer will hear his name called tonight. So I think I've created my own little man cave here at Parkview Field, so I'm kind of ready for everything to happen tonight. So, Eric, this has been a topsy-turvy process for DeShone Kizer. I don't think any of us could have imagined that there would have been so many twists and turns with DeShone Kizer. A lot of speculation, a lot of rumors. Is he a good teammate? Is he a good leader? The list goes on and on. He did an interview recently that he feels like he had some things taken out of context, and you'll hear about that from the Dan Patrick interview coming up in just a couple of moments. So there's a lot of stuff to put in the stew, Eric. We stir it up. As you've listened, as you've learned, as you've watched, I know this is going to be kind of an unpredictable question, but here we are. Getting toward the finish line, the NFL draft starts tonight with round number one. Are you still thinking there's a chance he could be taken in round one tonight despite all of the dark clouds overhead?
I think there's a slight chance. I think every major mock draft, and it seems like there's way too many of them now, has him going in the second round. But I could see, you know, somebody saying, hey, he's still sitting there. Let's go get him with, you know, one of the latter picks of the first round, making a trade to do that. Even though, again, he's not a guy that they're projecting to start next year, I could see that possibly happening. But my expectation is for him to go in the second round, and I think that's fine. You know, I did a story today on that whole situation, and, you know, Scott Wright seems to think him falling into the second round is actually going to benefit him, because he's going to end up going to a team that's going to give his career a better chance for longevity.
But then again, he could be taken in the first five picks of the second round, and it's going to be on a team that's probably not what you're looking for, the San Franciscos, those type of teams. So I get what he means in general, but I don't think necessarily dropping to the second is a great thing, because he could just fall into the lap of one of those teams rather than, You could be taken by a team in the 20s. Maybe a team like Arizona drops back in the first round. I think they are a realistic team to take a quarterback early in the draft, but not at 13. So that would be a better situation for me. I mean, it's just a situation, Eric. There isn't a quarterback in this draft that's ready to go. I mean, that's the bottom line. If you need a quarterback to play right now, there is not one player that can get the job done. I still think there's a high ceiling for DeShone Kizer. I don't think you'll see that ceiling for a couple of years. I think he needs to sit and watch a little bit. But I just don't understand him falling behind some of the names we've heard, like Dobbs, for example, from Tennessee. I think that's unrealistic, but I think he's still a guy that showed a lot at Notre Dame, even though last year was not great from many standpoints. I think his height, his strong arm, and I still think he's a very smart individual, gives him a chance to succeed once this draft process is over.
Well, I agree, and I mean, I wouldn't think that San Francisco's a bad spot for him. I actually think that's a place where he could go and not have to start next year. But, we'll see how it goes. I think it's most important for him to end up in a place where he has a chance to have a long career rather than have a little bit more guaranteed money and have a little bit more of a windfall. Because if you've got the body of... No, I'm just kidding. but if DeShone is as good as he thinks he is, and I think he probably is, he's going to make enough money during an NFL career. So why not, go to a team where you have a chance to have some developmental time and then be the starter and then be ready to have a long NFL career? So it's been a weird journey with him, but I think all in all, he seems to be happy. He seems to be excited for tonight. He knows that he may be in the green room for a long time. Brian Kelly's going to be there with him. His family is in Philadelphia. And, I still think he's going to be successful. Look, Darren, I charted. There's been 26 quarterbacks recruited to Notre Dame since Lou Holtz walked out the door. And DeShone will be the fourth one drafted out of those 26. Wow. And only the third to be drafted as a quarterback.
Right. Now, see, I look at it a little differently than you. I don't think San Francisco is a great situation because there is not a team that is built and ready to win over the next 2 years. They are just going to start that process. They really are just looking for a bridge quarterback this year and then hand it over to a guy like DeShone Kizer, next season. But in order for a quarterback to succeed, they got to have a lot of parts around them. I know a quarterback can only do so much, and I just don't see San Francisco as a team. It may take until 2019, 2020 before they're a good enough football team that allows the quarterback that is taken tonight to have a chance to succeed. Now, I know in the NFL you can turn things around a little quicker. You get a little easier schedule, but they just appear to be a team that I just don't think it's going to be ready to go anytime soon. That's why I just kind of hope there's like that Arizona team that's got a pretty nice foundation, that has a 38-year-old quarterback that's going to play one more year and then hand it off to the new guy.
The one thing I'll say about San Francisco, at least they're not looking to get rid of their coach. They have a new coach with Kyle Shanahan. Matt LaFleur, I believe, is the offensive coordinator. He's got familiarity with Kizer, likes Kizer. They've worked together a little bit. And so from that standpoint, you're not looking at a team that's the coach is going to be gone at the end of the season. I think the worst place to go other than Cleveland, for example, would be the Jets. I think that would be a circus.
Yes, it would without a doubt be a circus. Well, the one thing we do know, despite a lot of rumors today that Mitch Trubisky might be the surprise number one pick of the Cleveland Browns. He's the quarterback from North Carolina. Apparently, that was all just speculation. Who knows? It could have been Cleveland trying to get the whole league excited and trying to get a big trade offer coming their way. But now the latest is all the NFL reporters on Twitter are saying it's going to be Myles Garrett, the defensive end of Texas A&M, going number one. And I'm sure the Browns would be interested in moving around to possibly take Trubisky. They have pick 12. They have the arsenal with all the draft picks to move up if they would like to. So it appears that Myles Garrett of A&M will go number one to the Browns. And then it's just chaos, Eric. This is one of the most clouded NFL drafts I can remember. After you take Myles Garrett, I don't think anyone has a good feel what's going to happen. This is truly going to be a reality show tonight, because normally there's like, let's say, five picks, and they're going to go in some order. Eric, it's going to be impossible for these mock drafts to come true. And I heard today, it was Mike Mayock on the Dan Patrick Show, said that basically if you have pick 18 through 50, you're drafting the same player. There's that much quality and depth that a lot of teams that are picking 18, 20, 25 wouldn't mind dropping back because they feel like they can get the same player. But I think, Eric, this is going to be an amazing night in the draft. They want a lot of drama. They don't want tons of drama like we had last year unfolding the Mississippi offensive tackle. But at the same time, I think this is going to be an absolute crazy night. I think there's going to be a lot of movement, and I think a lot of surprises along the way.
I would agree with you. I think a lot of trades, you know, it's going to be really interesting. And that's why I'm not ruling anything out for round one. I expect Deshaun to go in round two, but it was would not surprise me if he sneaks in the first round. And again, you know, he's going to be only the third of those 26 quarterbacks drafted. The guy with the longest career of the previous three was Arnez Battle, who was drafted as a wide receiver.
Wow. That seems a long time ago, Eric.
You know? It was. It was 2003 when he was drafted, and he played 9 years, and he played in more than 100 games. You know, Brady Quinn and Jimmy Clausen, even though they were around for a while, neither one has played in more than 25 actual games in the NFL.
Unbelievable. We were young pups back then when Arnez Battle
was really young.
Well, again, Deshaun Kizer was on the Dan Patrick Show on WSBT Radio earlier today. You can hear Dan from 9 to noon on WSBT Radio. So give a listen. This was former Irish quarterback Deshaun Kizer on draft day speaking with Dan Patrick, and even answers some questions about that recent article that caused, I guess, a lot of chaos, including on our program, trying to figure out how in the world did he start talking about Tom Brady and Cam Newton and himself in the same sentence. He explains all that. Give a listen.
What's the schedule today, Deshaun? What do you have going on the rest of the day?
So there's a lunch with the legends coming up here shortly, so you get to spend some time with some of the legends around town today. And then from there, it's just kind of bouncing around a little bit with a couple of interviews. And we'll get rolling around 4 o'clock, getting dressed, and get ready for that red carpet and head on over to the draft.
How you feeling?
Feeling good. This has been an awesome process. It's obviously an honor to even be invited to Philly for the draft, and my family's enjoying it. They're having a good time, and just kind of taking it all in day by day.
But what kind of advice have you gotten, since you're not projected to go high in the first round, and if you do go, it'd be maybe late in the first round. You're going to be sitting in the green room for a little while.
The advice that I've gotten is just to, once again, just enjoy the moment. I mean, this experience in itself is something that's absolutely amazing. And as soon as you make it bigger than what it is, and you know, start looking to things that could happen down the road, and start looking at all the negatives, you're not going to enjoy the time that you're having. So we're just trying to stay in the moment as much as we can.
How would you sum up your season, this last season at Notre Dame? For somebody who didn't see you play, how would you describe it?
It was unique. I think we obviously ended up 4-8. You know, 7 out of those 8 games, we have an opportunity in the fourth quarter to win it. So it was definitely a situation in which we were a little disappointed, and we like to win those games in the fourth quarter, and we did the year before. But, you know, as a quarterback of a team who goes 4-8, I was pretty disappointed and frustrated throughout most of those losses.
How are you and Coach Kelly okay? He had some comments about you that you should still be in college. You guys had a conversation?
Absolutely. You know, Chris Kelly and I have a really good relationship, and he let me know that when I decided to leave. You know, there definitely is a lot of room for improvement, and, you know, I embraced those comments, and I took them for exactly what they are, and I just plan on making those improvements at the next level. This decision had a lot to do about my personal development, where I think I stand, you know, with my game, and quite frankly, I thought that, you know, with my goals being to win a Super Bowl one day, that was my time to go.
All right, explain this to me, though, the quote where you had Tom Brady's mind, Cam Newton's body. Can you give me the context of that, Deshaun?
Yeah, so, I mean, the conversation that was had was about, you know, where I set my goals and how I can take the responsibilities from the Notre Dame offense and let that lead into a situation in which I could be successful in the NFL. So when talking about Tom Brady's mind, it's like, hey, look, you know, with all the responsibilities I had at Notre Dame, I'll be able to, you know, transfer that over and hopefully prepare and have the intellect that Tom Brady has and understand defenses and offenses the way Tom Brady does. And if you can add that with that athleticism of one of the best athletes in the, you know, probably in all sports, and with Cam Newton, that's the ultimate goal to set to. If I the way the quote came out was, "I am," you know, Tom Brady's brain. I am Cam Newton's body. No, it's not even close to that. And I'm glad that people laughed at that because that is absolutely hilarious. I know there's a lot of work to get there, and I'm just setting my goals high so I can hopefully, you know, achieve the greatness I want to achieve.
But that's why I wanted to ask you, because when it came out, I went, wait a minute, is he saying that he has Tom Brady's mind and Cam Newton's body? They're gonna rough you up about that.
Absolutely. Go look at any picture of me. Everyone knows I don't have Cam Newton's body. And Tom Brady's won 5 Super Bowls. I think he'd have been, you know, a little better than 4-8 in his last year, his last couple of years. That was, imagine if I could go ahead and take someone like Tom Brady's mind and put it with Cam Newton's body. There's my goal. If you want to see where my goals are and where I want to be one day, it's 5+ Super Bowls. It's one of the more athletic guys in the league, and it's a guy who's more prepared and, you know, more determined than anyone else out there.
Favorite team growing up?
Philadelphia Eagles, right here in Philly.
Oh.
That was a big fan of Randall Cunningham, so I was following him just like Dad was.
Favorite quarterback was obviously Randall Cunningham as well.
Well, no, actually mine was Donovan McNabb.
Have you met later. Donovan?
I've not. I've always wanted to.
Well, he's there today.
I'm sure I'm going to see him around then. I'm looking around as much as I can.
But do you play more like Donovan McNabb than you do Randall Cunningham?
I don't know. I guess we'll see when I get to the league what my play looks like when I get there.
Do you have any idea where you're going?
No idea. And it's not fun, I can tell you that.
Yeah, because that's got to be strange. You go to Philadelphia, you're going to sit there for a couple of hours tonight, and then you're going to wait, and then you're going to go, okay, now my next 4 or 5 years is going to be in this city.
Yeah. I mean, it's the beauty of the draft.
Damn. Are you hugging? Give me the game plan with the commissioner. When you go up on stage, hug, handshake. Bro hug, combo, what do we got?
Whatever he does, allow it to be natural, because as soon as you plan to do one thing and he plans to do another, you're just looking awkward in front of everyone.
Maybe just go a firm handshake. You're there for, it's all business, Deshaun.
Absolutely, I'm down for that.
Are your parents going? Family going to be there?
Yeah, family's in town. They're all enjoying this process with me.
Was former Fighting Irish quarterback Deshaun Kizer on the Dan Patrick Show this morning on WSBT Radio. You know what my favorite part of the interview was?
Was the hug. I don't know.
No. When he did not answer the question who he was more like, Donovan McNabb or Randall Cunningham, because the last thing you need to do is compare yourself to someone. So I think, lesson learned, he did not go down that road, and that was the greatest decision he made during that particular interview. Now, let me say this, Eric, from a serious standpoint. You are an individual that is a journalist that writes stories. You have a process that you go through when you gather information for a story. When you interview someone, I know you have a tape recorder, you document things, and you keep a lot of things, which comes in very, very handy. And I know along the way, too, you'll take some notes as you're doing the interview besides recording the interview. Now, I'm not picking sides here. I'm just trying to be a little realistic. The article said what it said. It quoted Deshaun Kizer as making those comments. Now, I don't know if the writer still has the audio or not. I'd love to know if he did. I'd love to hear it. I just can't imagine an experienced NFL writer like the one that wrote the article on Kizer for Sports Illustrated got it wrong. So I'm kind of sticking up for the journalists a little bit. I'm not trying to talk down to Deshaun Kizer, but he's trying to play this off that he didn't compare himself to those people. And I hope that is the case, but I also have to nod my head to the journalist, a very experienced NFL writer. I can't believe that he would just take the quotes, twist them, and try to make it into something than maybe the comment was supposed to be.
Well, I think where it got most twisted was once it was, after it was published, because Pro Football Talk, I believe is the website, took the word imagine out of it and said, I have Tom Brady's intellect and Cam Newton's body. And the actual quote that was in the USA Today story was, imagine taking Brady's intellect and Brady's preparation and putting it on a guy with Cam Newton's body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you read the quotes around it, it doesn't sound out of context. He is saying imagine. I think he's trying to talk about his potential, but he is not puffing humility in the quote. It starts out with, no one else can do what I can do. I've truly figured out in this draft process if I can maximize all my potential in every aspect. This is bold. I do have the ability to be the greatest quarterback to ever play. Right. Now, again, he's talking about his potential. He's not talking about where he is now. But there is not, it is not laced with humility. So I think Deshaun did some recasting of it. And I think the way that the Twitter world and the aggregators world operates now, you don't get a clean context on a lot of these things because people are looking for clicks. I don't fault the guy that wrote the story. I thought overall the story was pretty balanced.
Yes.
In context. So I thought he did a pretty good job. Part of me seems to think that Deshaun was tired of kind of all the pounding was taken, and he just was trying to stand up for himself and maybe stepped over a line a little bit in doing so. Then when he realized what he said, you know, I've seen a lot of different versions of this. I heard the Dan Patrick version. There was another version yesterday. There was the Jack Collinsworth version during the Blue Gold game.
Oh, gosh.
And so he's spent the whole week kind of talking about this. Now, again, you know, you talk to Mike Mayock, you talk to Scott Wright, and you talk to Joe Theismann. None of those guys think that this is going to push him up or down in the draft. But it's not a great look, and you certainly want to clarify this because you're going to get killed in the locker room if you own those quotes.
Your first three interception game, I thought you were Tom Brady. You know, that type of thing will happen very easily.
I know that we've had fun with it. You know, today.
Sure.
Tyler James said, imagine the brains of Eric Hansen in a transcript, you know. So as he was posting my transcript from today's chat. But, you know, I think it's time for him to stop talking about it, to be honest with you. But when you and I talked about it initially on Sports Beat, you know, we both kind of scratched our heads and said, this isn't the guy that we've seen for 2 years, you know, that's been in the spotlight for 2 years. And I think he just had a moment where he wasn't at his best. And it's been rare because he's handled far more difficult things. He's handled the hurricane better. He handled the benching better. He handled 4-8 better. And I think it just got away from him.
And my comments are mainly toward the main article, not about the offshoot articles. Mine was about the main article. Just standing up for that writer just a little bit. Tyler James will join us for an IndyInsider.com recruiting update next. This is Budweiser's Weekday Speed on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues on 96.1 FM, WSBT, with the NDInsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
Our NDInsider.com recruiting update brought to you by Harold Ziegler, Ford Lincoln, and Elkhart, 2525 Bypass Road, or at Z4.com. Every Thursday at 5:30, we talk Fighting Irish football recruiting with the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune, Tyler James, a fan of the team in Major League Baseball with the best team ERA as we play on April the 27th. Who would have thought that, Tyler James? It's like the White Sox you've never seen before.
Yeah, who needs Chris Sale, right?
And who needs Quintana pitching well, right? I mean, I'm sure you took Miguel Gonzalez in like the third round of your fantasy baseball draft.
Oh, I did plenty of White Sox homer talk in the second hour yesterday, so I'm sure people are already tired of that.
Hey, there's never enough bragging. I'll tell you what, they're playing really well right now. Well, you were busy this past weekend with the Blue Gold game, a lot of individuals in town. I guess, Tyler, let's just start the conversation with Blue Gold visitors. What did you pick up this weekend?
Yeah, Notre Dame hosted a good group of players, but I'm not terribly confident that I think going into the weekend, I thought that there would be maybe a number of guys that were visiting that would end up in Notre Dame's class. I'm a little less confident in that coming off of the weekend. I think Dallas Gant's going to be hard to pull from Ohio State. He's a kid that's already planning to make a decision in May, so that was kind of Notre Dame's last chance to maybe pull him out of the state because he's from Toledo. Virginia Tech commit Nazir Peoples was a guy we didn't talk about last week because I didn't know he was coming until after our update. And he came on campus, and because he was committed to Virginia Tech, he thought, well, maybe he's pretty serious about Notre Dame. But he shared a text message with 24/7 Sports saying, no comparison, still a Hokie, when asked about his visit to Notre Dame. So that was pretty a blunt take there. And then I think the other three guys, P.J. Mustafer, Chase Cota, Kevin Austin, Notre Dame's got some tough competition for those guys. So we'll see how things play out in the long run with those guys. I don't expect any sort of decisions in the immediate future from those guys. Chase Cota's a guy who's from Oregon and his dad played at Oregon, so getting him away from the Ducks isn't going to be easy. So we'll see how that plays out. Not a ton of great news coming out of the weekend. I think the kids spoke highly of their visits, so it wasn't like they didn't enjoy themselves, but I do think that Notre Dame is trailing for some of these guys.
Well, and you didn't mention how much red carpet was rolled out, but maybe we'll get that later in the report. There's 12 commits in this class right now, and you had mentioned that cornerback Kalen Gervin had visited some other schools. Should Notre Dame be concerned about him doing this?
I don't think so. I think it's always a little bit of a concern when a kid's visiting other schools, but this is a little bit different. He was making trips with his friends and his teammates to different schools across the country. They hit a small region with Virginia Tech, Louisville, Tennessee, Marshall, Ohio, and Chattanooga all getting visits. So, yeah, you even look at some of those teams. You don't expect Notre Dame to be too worried about losing Kalen Gervin to Chattanooga. But I think that it's just something to monitor. He even mentioned he told Notre Dame about it. So that's the first thing. That's a good note that he was upfront with Notre Dame to let him know that this is what he's doing. But it's something they do regularly at Detroit Cass Tech and going to visit other schools. And so that's just kind of how that played out. But I'm sure the coaches at Virginia Tech and Louisville and Tennessee were all pretty happy to see Kalen Gervin on their campus and hoping that maybe they can flip him from Notre Dame. But he seems pretty confident pretty strong in his commitment to Notre Dame, and I'm not too worried about that right now.
Tyler James with our IndyInsider.com recruiting update on WSBT Radio. If I could just backpedal to the Blue Gold game one more time.
Sure.
Tyler, just in your time covering Irish recruiting, do they ever get any commitments out of the Blue Gold game? I mean, it just doesn't seem like it's like some of the other events that they have. Yeah, you can get kids on campus. There's gold helmets running around the field. But am I right? Normally you don't see too many commitments come out of that weekend?
Not in recent years. I think they've done a good job of getting guys earlier in the spring on campus and then not putting as big of an emphasis on the Blue Gold game. It's been strange in the past couple years because of the stadium construction and the one year they didn't even have the game in the stadium. So it has been a little bit different. I don't know. Maybe that will change moving forward when they can host kids for official visits in April. There may be a bigger impact there if they can get more kids on campus and maybe it becomes a bigger deal. But it's just another time that there's a chance to host some kids. So you obviously want to get kids on campus. But yeah, I don't think the Blue Gold game is a great representation of what a Notre Dame game is like, and it certainly isn't the same as getting on campus for a practice when you have maybe more time to spend with the coaching staff and stuff like that.
Tyler, right after the game, I kind of asked Brian Kelly what was next for the coaching staff, and I meant more in terms of strategy and things like that, but yeah. He went into recruiting and saying that the assistants, 9 of them, will be out until about the middle of May. And I'm curious, because that they're doing these visits at this point, would we expect there to be a slowdown in commitments? Is this really more about building the relationships further, evaluating guys further, so that when you get them back on campus in June, maybe that's when the commitment window kind of reopens?
Exactly. Yeah, that's how I would anticipate that playing out. This period isn't they're not allowed to actually to have conversations in person with these kids when they're making these visits. It's called an evaluation period. So, like it says, they're there to evaluate kids, and they're on campus meeting with the coaching staff, and they'll say hi to the kids, and the kids will know that they're on campus, and then later that day they'll call the coaches and talk to them. So it's not really that big of a time to develop these relationships. It's more just getting to know the kids better in terms from their from the school's perspective and how they would fit at Notre Dame, and evaluating some guys that maybe you're a little curious about that you haven't offered yet, and maybe see them in person to get a take on whether you should offer them down the line. So that's kind of the big thing here. And then obviously because they're out on the road, they won't be hosting a lot of guys on campus either, because Notre Dame won't have many people on campus when it comes to either coaches or also players too. When they get done with the semester, they have a little bit of a off time there before they come back in June.
Tyler, the Irish have a pretty good group of offensive linemen right now. Looking to the future, you've got Jalen Mayfield, Under Armour camp on Sunday. He was a blue gold visitor. What type of player is he, and do you expect the Irish to offer him?
Yeah, kind of an interesting story there. Jalen's a 6'5", 260-pound junior from Grand Rapids, Michigan Catholic Central High School up there. And he hasn't received an offer from Notre Dame, but he did visit. And I spoke to him at the camp, and he said he was a little disappointed that he didn't get to talk to the coaches that much. So that obviously makes it seem that maybe they're not as high on him as we maybe thought they mm-hmm. may be. He is – his profile is kind of strange. 24/7 Sports has him as the number 10 offensive tackle in the country after some camp performances recently, and he also received a Michigan offer in May. So I think that's or in March. His last name is Mayfield, so mix that up there. But so I think that's been part of it. But then Rivals only has him as a 3-star recruit and didn't include him among the top 50 offensive tackles in the class. So some varying opinions there. It seems that Notre Dame is more towards the Rivals' opinion than the 24/7 Sports opinion. But maybe there was just some sort of miscommunication there. And Notre Dame, I asked him if he expected them to get out and see him, and he did say yes, but it sounded like they wouldn't be out there until late May. So it doesn't seem right now that that's a name that Notre Dame is very interested in moving forward with an offer and really pushing for it this time. But we'll have to see if that changes here in the near future. They are obviously already have two offensive linemen in the class, and Cole Mabry and John Dirksen out of Ohio. So they're in a good spot, but they certainly need some offensive tackle prospects. And Jalen is a guy that maybe we thought Notre Dame would be interested in.
You know, tell Jalen Mayfield that if they have him run through the visitor's tunnel, it's not a good sign as far as an offer.
He might hit his head in there.
There you go.
Eric, for people that don't know what you're talking about, why don't you explain really quick?
It's a claustrophobia-inducing tunnel that they've added for the visiting team, and really it looks like you can only go single file through it. And it looks like if you're Mike McGlinchey's side, you may have to duck. So it may take about, you know, a half an hour or 20 minutes for the visiting team to get through that tunnel.
Yeah, it's like you're a dungeon and you're walking out onto the field. It's very, very interesting. I don't know if it's going to be intimidating or not. I know Mike Farrell wrote a story, and he's got a story on the website about kind of the experience that maybe Notre Dame's going for with that.
I think they should pipe Crazy Train into that tunnel only. But
a constant loop.
But you were mentioning about the evaluation period, the coaches being all over the country, and I'm sure they're checking in on guys that are already committed. They're looking at 18s and 19s. Where are some of the coaches? Where are some of the key spots that they visited geographically?
Yeah, kind of all over the place. They were in Ohio a lot on Wednesday. Mike Elko and Mike Elston. They saw Dallas Gant, who was just on campus. They also saw Tyreek Smith in the Cleveland area. Mike Elston saw Brian Asamoah in Columbus, Ohio. So that's where those guys were on Wednesday. Chip Long stopped in to see Phil Dracovic in Pennsylvania. Mike Elko made a trip out to New Jersey on Tuesday to see the Adam Alola twins and Shane Simon, the Rover target they're looking at. Mike Elson, even before he made some of his travels out of state, stopped in at Penn High School to check in on Anthony Torres, the tight end there. Notre Dame hasn't offered there, but just kind of keeping an eye on a local kid that's done well. Todd Light was in Colorado checking on another McCaffrey, Luke McCaffrey. Delvon Alexander's been all over the place. He was in St. Louis on Tuesday, New Orleans on Wednesday, and he's in Oregon today, so he's racking up some frequent flyer miles. Mike Elko and Clark Lee were checking out Jamie and Franklin in Maryland, a defensive tackle target. So they're really spreading out all over the country. Brian Polian's out in California. So it's a good time to just kind of check in on guys, kind of reevaluate where you're at with kids and kind of figure out a plan moving forward of what you're going to do and who you're going to offer going into the summer.
For the older generation in our listening audience, going back to the claustrophobic tunnel they have, it should be Theron Young's Hello Wall. But if you don't know that song, it doesn't make sense. Tyler's not laughing. He has no idea what I'm talking about. All right.
You lost me there, Darren.
I know. It's an old country song where a guy's talking to the walls, and that's where I came up with that. We'll move along. How about David Bell, in-state wide receiver?
Yeah, David Bell is another guy that Notre Dame's been high on. He's from Indianapolis, and I saw him at the Under Armour camp this past weekend as well, and he spoke highly of Notre Dame. He said he wants to get back there soon for another visit. He's been here twice already. He's from Warren Central High School, the same school that produced Sheldon Day and McKelty Williams. And so he doesn't necessarily have a relationship with those guys. He did say he has heard quite a bit from Marquis Stepp, another Indianapolis kid that's committed to Notre Dame. And I think we saw in the last recruiting cycle that Notre Dame was a little wishy-washy on some in-state recruits with Rush Yeast and Mac Hibbethammer not offering them till late, but that's certainly not the case with David Bell. They offered him early. We talked about George Karloftis, a kid out of West Lafayette, Indiana, defensive end in the 2019 class Notre Dame's been high on. So there seems to be some pretty talented kids in the state in the 2019 class, so it's very important for Notre Dame to get out in front of there if those are guys that they really want to make sure that they don't let them leave the state.
Tyler, last one for me. Besides Dallas Gant, who's deciding in May, is there anybody else that has a decision timeline that Notre Dame's involved with?
Well, Jamie and Franklin has a decision, I believe, for early June. I don't remember the date off the top of my head. Early July. Sorry about that. He'll be probably visiting here in June for the Irish Invasion and then make a decision sometime after that. He's looking at that as per decision. There's not any other guys that come to my head in terms of guys that are on the brink that Notre Dame is in a good spot for that's making a decision. So might not be a ton of commitment decision news in the next couple weeks, but there'll certainly be plenty of travels for Notre Dame's coaching staff to keep track of and checking in on where Notre Dame stands with those guys.
Tyler, what's coming up in the South Bend Tribune or IndyInsider.com?
Yeah, I have a story on David Bell coming in either tomorrow or the next day's newspaper, and it's on IndyInsider.com right now. Checking in with him, seeing where he stood with Notre Dame, and we'll keep track of some more guys. There's another guy, Jason Bargie, is an Illinois defensive end in the 2019 class that received an offer. I spoke to him as well, so I'll have a story coming on him, too.
Recruiting never ends. He's Tyler James, Fighting Irish Football Recruiting Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Tyler, thank you. We'll speak again next week.
All right, see you guys.
Always great stuff from Tyler. We greatly appreciate it. IndyInsider.com or the South Bend Tribune. It is 5:47. He's Eric. I'm Darren. Coming up next, the My Five question of the day. The five Notre Dame players who helped themselves the most during spring practice. Answers next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beats, My Five Question of the Day, on 960 AM and 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Along with Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune, I'm Darren Pritchett. Here is today's question. The five Notre Dame football players who helped themselves the most during the spring. Five answers ranked in order. Number one is the player who helped himself the most. We begin with number five.
I'm going to go with a chemical engineering major at number five who got a perfect 36 on his ACT coming out of high school, and that's kicker Sam Kohler. You know, Sam was not even an afterthought when spring started. He's a walk-on, but in the blue gold game, he kicked field goals of 46 and 42 yards, made every extra point. And really, Darren, he's been doing it all spring. And if Notre Dame got below that 85 scholarship limit, I could see him being able to earn a scholarship. He improved that much.
He looked the part in the blue goal game, that's for sure. How about number four?
I'm going to go with Alize Mack in this spot. Not only did he pull off a name change, you know, he had to earn back the trust of the coaches both on and off the field after missing last year because of academics. We all know Alize's very talented. But you know what? Durham Smythe played last year, is an older player, had a great winter, was ahead of him. And Alize pushed himself right back to the top of the depth chart.
The five Notre Dame football players who helped themselves the most this spring. Here's number three.
I'm going with Miles Boykin in this spot. I thought the big wide receiver core is interesting. I'll be interested to see if it stays that way or if Stefferson or Freddie Canteen can kind of push into that starting lineup. But right now it looks like it's going to be the big receivers. Miles Boykin was the number three player at the W position last year. Now he's a starter, and he looks every bit the part of a starting wide receiver.
Number two.
In this spot, I'm going to go with a guy that was the sixth option at cornerback when spring was coming up, and now he is the number one free safety, and that's Nick Coleman. That's not to say Nick has the number one job nailed down, but he held it throughout spring. He goes into fall camp as the number one option there. I think worst case scenario, he's number two. So he took advantage of a position change, and right now he's the starter.
The five Notre Dame football players who helped themselves the most during spring practice. Number five, place kicker Sam Kohler. Number four, tight end Alize Mack. Three, wide receiver Miles Boykin. Two, free safety Nick Coleman. And number one is...
Number one, I am going with Nick Watkins. Nick was coming off a broken arm. He missed all last season because of it. In the meantime, some young cornerbacks now had more career starts than him, had more career tackles. He jumped over all of them, and he will go into August as a starter, whether Sean Crawford's healthy or not. Nick Watkins is going to be a starting cornerback and a pretty good one on this football team.
And that concludes our My 5 Question of the Day from Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. A quick update on Major League Baseball so far today. A couple of final scores. The New York Mets lost at home to the Atlanta Braves, 7-5. The Braves are ahead of the Mets in the standing. Who would have thought that at the start of the year? To make matters worse, the best pitcher, you could argue, the Mets have, Noah Syndergaard, was scratched. He's listed as having a tired arm. That's obviously scary. And then Yoenis Cespedes, their best offensive player, barely could leave the field due to a hamstring injury. So the Mets are now 8-13, 4-10 at home. They lose to the Braves today, 7-5, and two of their best players are not looking very good as of right now, health-wise. Wild game in St. Louis this afternoon. Game one of a doubleheader. Toronto led St. Louis 4-0. Going to the bottom of the seventh inning, St. Louis scored one in the seventh. They picked up a couple of more runs in the eighth and the ninth to tie the game at four. And then the game went to the 11th inning where Matt Carpenter hit a walk-off grand slam for St. Louis. And the Cardinals beat the Blue Jays 8-4. Game two of the doubleheader coming up in about an hour and a half. At the Rock Pile in Denver, it is the Nationals 15, the Rockies 2. Nationals batting in the top of the eighth. The Nationals are for real this year, folks. They are going to be a big time out in the National League. The Dodgers and the Giants are 1-1 after seven innings, six total hits in that game. Another final score, it was the Phillies over the Marlins 3-2. The Mariners edge the Tigers 2-1. Justin Verlander pitched well, but the Tigers lose. And as I mentioned, the Braves over the Mets by a score of 7-5. Astros, Indians delayed right now due to weather, and weather could be a problem throughout the weekend. And Eric, just to tell you a really quick story, South Bend was at Lansing yesterday, and the wind was blowing out, so I want to make that clear as I tell the story. But South Bend has an outfielder by the name of Kevontae Mitchell from Kennett, Missouri, about 3 hours from St. Louis. He was a kid the Cubs drafted out of high school. I've mentioned a couple of times this year, I love his approach at the plate. Got off to a slow start average-wise, but I watch him in batting practice. I watch how he goes through his at-bats. I think he's got a lot of potential. Well, yesterday he went 3-for-6, but one of the hits was maybe the most impressive thing I have seen in my 3 years of doing this. He hit a ball 501 feet.
Woo.
And to paint the picture, in Lansing, they have an apartment complex from about left center wrapped around to right center. And it's probably a good distance from the wall. In fact, they have a spot in straightaway center on the top of the building, 483 feet. Eric, he hit it over the building in left center field. It went over the apartment building. If you want to see it, just Google Cooley Law School Stadium in Lansing and a picture. And if you look at the left side of that building in left center field, the ball cleared it. I didn't believe it because I lost sight of the ball. I couldn't see where it landed. And I'm just assuming there's a little bistro down below the apartments. And I'm thinking it just probably rattled around in there and I didn't see it land. Well, the reason why I didn't see it land, it went over the building. 501 feet. So Kevontae Mitchell was the gentleman that did that yesterday. And it was, you knew it as soon as he hit it. And the wind was blowing out, don't get me wrong, but still. 501, Eric, is 501. He ate his Wheaties. It wasn't all about the wind.
Well, tell you what, I want some of those Wheaties.
I just want to hit one like that just one time. I'll drop the mic and just walk away from baseball. I just want to hit it once like that. We'll take a final break. More Sports Beat coming up on WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, we'll have all kinds of NFL draft stuff, including what the Bears do with pick number 3. I'll have whatever's going on with Notre Dame, whether Deshaun gets picked tonight or not. The transcript from my live chat today will be in tomorrow's Tribune. Andy recruiting David Bell with Tyler. High school tennis, St. Joe at Penn. High school baseball, Edwardsburg at Niles, and much, much more.
We'll talk more about this tomorrow, but just 15 seconds worth. How many players do you think will be taken on Friday from Notre Dame? We'll take a Kaiser out of the equation. How many get taken in the second and third round?
I say zero.
Okay, so Rochelle and Jones will have to wait a little while longer. Eric, enjoyed it as always. Enjoy the draft tonight. I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about tomorrow.
Sounds great.
That's Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Sean Stiers joins me next. More on the draft, more on Kaiser, rapid fire, South Bend Cubs news all coming up. It is the top of the hour on WSBT South Bend.
This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's a home run ball. Going for it is Fuller. He's out there. He catches it. Touchdown, Notre Dame.
Jackson with a spectacular spin move. And now the no-look pass to Zach August with a two-handed slam.
Adios. Two-run home run, Gleyber Torres.
Kaiser looks, timing pattern.
Caught, touchdown, Notre Dame. Corey Hunter Jr.
Number one goes down at Notre Dame again.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Hour two of Sports Beat on WSBT Radio, Michiana sports leader. We're brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. We're also brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air and Harold Ziegler Ford Lincoln in Elkhart. Sean back in our WSBT studios. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs tonight in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Game one of a four-game series between the Cubs and the Tin Caps. And the first pitch tonight at 7:05 on WSBT Radio. The Jordan Automotive Group pregame show starts our coverage at 6:50 in just about 43 minutes. NFL draft starts tonight. Chicago Bears pick number 3, Colts at 15, Lions are at 21. You got the Deshaun Kaiser factor. I think you have the entire quarterback factor, which is going to be fascinating to watch unfold tonight in Philadelphia. Only the first round tonight, rounds 2 and 3 tomorrow, 4 through 7 on Saturday. We're probably looking at three Notre Dame players being drafted. Kaiser, Jones, Rochelle. We'll see if anything else pops up. But that seems to be the main three guys we'll be talking about. And Sean, for DeShone Kaiser, it's been an interesting month, to say the least. But now here we are at draft day. He's going to sit in the green room, and he'll just have to see how it unfolds. He's got to be ready for cameras being in his face, unfortunately. If he's still around, picks 27, 28, 29. If you're a quarterback, and especially if you're a Notre Dame guy, they're going to have the camera on you quite a bit. So
yep.
You got to be comfortable with that. But I think there's a part of me that says, even though it's agonizing to go through the process like that, and there's a very good chance he won't be taken tonight, but at the same time, I think if I'm in his shoes, I go, because that's just got to be an amazing experience just to watch it all unfold. And then when you hear your name called in person, you meet the commissioner, you give him the man hug, I just think those are memories that you shouldn't leave behind. So whether it's today or tomorrow, I don't blame DeShone Kaiser for being there.
Yeah, and it's a different situation, for example, than, say, Brady Quinn, who really went right up until the draft before he cut his stock sort of started to fall. Unfortunately for Kaiser, he's had to be dealing with this for a long time. And like he told Dan Patrick earlier today here on WSBT, he doesn't really know where he's going to go. So I think he's more resigned to the fact that he is going to be sitting there for a while. His level of expectation is different, and we know he's an Eagles fan for a long time, and so he's getting to soak in Philadelphia, and he's doing some other things around the draft. He was visiting with some kids and doing some different stuff yesterday. So a lot of different things other than just the draft that he's experiencing, and just to kind of get to be there is a big deal for him. So again, I think he has his expectations in check. What is going to make it a long night, even though maybe he knows he's not going to go in the top half of the first round or even in the first round, is just he knows he's going to be sitting there for a while waiting to hear his name called one way or another, and that's never easy, regardless of what your expectation is going in.
As you mentioned, Kaiser was on the Dan Patrick Show earlier today on WSBT Radio. Dan Patrick, 9 to noon on 96.1 FM, WSBT. Why don't we offer a couple of sound bites? You cut this up earlier today, Sean, and these were the two big quotes, I think, coming out of that conversation. Two things that I think probably should be established once again. The first sound bite is a clarification of the story that came out in Sports Illustrated about Kaiser, where it appeared he compared himself to Tom Brady and Cam Newton. He has since said it was taken out of context. Well, Dan Patrick asked him about those comments today, and here's what Kaiser had to say.
The conversation that was had was about, you know, where I set my goals and how I can take the responsibilities from the Notre Dame offense and let that lead into a situation in which I could be successful in the NFL. So when talking about Tom Brady's mind, it's like, hey, look, you know, with all the responsibilities I had at Notre Dame, I'll be able to, you know, transfer that over and hopefully prepare and have the intellect that Tom Brady has and understand defenses and offenses the way Tom Brady does. And if you can add that with the athleticism of one of the best athletes in the, you know, probably in all sports, and with Cam Newton, that's the ultimate goal to set up to. The way the quote came out was, I am. You know, Tom Brady's brain, I am Cam Newton's body. No, it's not even close to that. And I'm glad that people laughed at that, because that is absolutely hilarious. I know there's a lot of work for me to get there, and I'm just setting my goals high so I can hopefully, you know, achieve the greatness I want to achieve.
But that's why I wanted to ask you, because when it came out, I went, wait a minute, is he saying that he has Tom Brady's mind and Cam Newton's body? They're gonna rough you up about that.
Absolutely. Go look at any picture of me. Everyone knows I don't have Cam Newton's body. And Tom Brady's won 5 Super Bowls. I think he'd have been, you know, a little better than 4-8 in his last year, his last couple of years. That was, imagine if I could go ahead and take someone like Tom Brady's mind and put it with Cam Newton's body. There's my goal. If you want to see where my goals are and where I want to be one day, it's 5+ Super Bowls. It's one of the more athletic guys in the league, and it's a guy who's more prepared and, you know, more determined than anyone else out there.
Sean, I don't know about you. I like that answer, and I wish he would have given that answer maybe a week ago.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's part of the problem, you know, because I think maybe that truly was his intention when he gave this initial interview, the story that came out in USA Today. But he's He's kind of okay. He said it was about where he set his goals. I get that, but it's just it's just not what he said. At least that's not what is printed in the quote. And the quote was a pretty long one. And just kind of listening back to that again, he says, "Imagine if." And I think that's a difference because I've got the whole quote here. And he says, "Okay, quote, this is bold. I do have the ability to be the greatest quarterback to ever play. Imagine taking Brady's intellect and Brady's preparation and putting it on a guy with Cam Newton's body. Why can't I be the greatest? The only thing stopping me from it is me. That's what's driving me now." So, there again, now, maybe we're dissecting and splitting hairs, but he says he said imagine if, but the way I read it, he's talking about the ability that he has, and he says, then goes on, imagine taking. He didn't say imagine if you were taking. He's kind of drawing a pretty direct line to himself. And so I guess, you know, it's again, it's splitting hairs and parsing at this point. I think the biggest thing is we're finally here at draft night, and maybe at least for a little while we can put some of this Kaiser drama behind us now as he gets set to embark.
Yeah, it's just about ready to go in the rear view mirror, and he can go on to his next challenge. And, you know, the Brian Kelly relationship thing was a couple of weeks ago. Dan brought it up again today. I feel like Deshaun and Brian are in a good place. I remember Pro Day. They spent a lot of time together talking. So I never sensed any issues between the two. I don't think there has been any issues. But at the same time, when Brian made the comment that Kaiser still should be in school, and that's the one that was really taken out of context and ran with, and unfortunately some folks, I didn't think, did a very good job, journalistically speaking, handling that story. So Patrick today with Kaiser on WSBT Radio asked him about that relationship with the head coach of the Fighting Irish.
Absolutely. You know, Chris Kelly and I have a really good relationship, and he let me know that when I decided to leave. You know, there definitely is a lot of room for improvement, and, you know, I embraced those comments, and I took them for exactly what they are, and I just plan on making those improvements at the next level. This decision has a lot to do about my personal development, where I think I stand, you know, with my game, and quite frankly, I thought that, you know, with my goals being to win a Super Bowl one day, that was my time to go.
So there you go. Everything's all fine and dandy. Brian Kelly's going to be there today. I never really felt like this was a story between Kelly and Kaiser.
No.
I'm sure, hey, all head coaches and quarterbacks have their moments. Trust me. You can't find a quarterback and a coach that don't have moments where they're probably frustrated with each other, but that just comes with the territory being in two pressure positions.
Well, how are you going to get better if you don't have a coach who's honest with you talking about what you need to work on and what your abilities are? I don't care who you are, whether if you're a Division I athlete or a professional athlete, and especially a Division I athlete who's aspiring to be a professional athlete, if you don't have the security that you can take the feedback you're getting from your coach, especially one who's coached offense for as long as he has and has worked with quarterbacks for as long as he has, how do you expect you're ever going to be better? And Kaiser, again, like when we sit here and we hear some of the stuff that Brian Kelly has or had to say from a few weeks ago, we didn't generally have a big issue with it the way that everyone else did around the country, because we're kind of in that bubble where we see these things, we hear these things, we know where he's coming from. But guys like Dan Patrick and the other 99% of the country, much farther outside the bubble. So it just registers differently for them hearing that. I don't think Kaiser ever had a problem from day one, because again, as both of them said, these are conversations they had behind closed doors and with Kaiser's family before he ever made the decision to come out. So I don't think it was ever really a problem for him.
So what's going to happen tonight? Are we going to hear Deshaun Kaiser's name?
You know what? We were sitting here on our Irish Illustrated Hour last night, and there were four of us, both Tims, O'Malley and Priester, and Pete Sampson. And we did kind of, toward the end, we did a quick yes or no. Will he go in the first round? And initially, We had two yeses and two noes. Then we went to break, and we came back. We went to break, and we started talking about some different guys who had gone in the first round before. Guys like Christian Ponder, Jake Locker, Mark Sanchez, Jason Campbell. Remember the Auburn quarterback, Jason Campbell? Guys like that went in the first round, and so we all came back, and it was unanimous. We think that by the end of the first round, especially if you've got a quarterback, if Trubisky goes earlier or whatever, I think the ripple effect starts a lot earlier, and I think he's got a really good chance to go late in the first round.
You do? Okay. Yep. I'm still standing by. He'll be taken in the first 10 picks of the second round.
Hey, by the way, I found this today, and I wanted to read it to you real quick because I found it interesting. Stanford head coach David Shaw did an interview yesterday. He's in Philadelphia. He did it with a Toledo TV station. Of course, Toledo, Deshaun Kizer's hometown. And I wanted to read you a quote that David Shaw had about Kizer and kind of get your take on this here real quick.
Okay.
So here's what David Shaw had to say about Deshaun Kizer. Quote, "You want to judge him on just basically what he does. This guy is big. He has a strong arm. He's athletic. He can make plays with his legs or his arm, and he's played great in tight games, too. Even in games that they lost, if you take his performances, that was a winning performance, even though that's just kind of the way it goes. You blame losses on quarterbacks and head coaches," end quote. So that's David Shaw from Stanford.
Okay. Well, I apologize. I was listening to you, and I'm getting a message from the Cubs manager, so I'm trying to deal with two things at once right now. We just had someone go on the DL, so I'm going to have to deal with that here as I'm talking. So I apologize. I was half listening to what you said. That's so okay.
Well, it's basically,
I have a headache right now.
A lot of where Kizer has been knocked in this process is, okay, the 4-8 record, they lost these close games, the things that he did or didn't do in close games, and here's David Shaw saying, even though they may have lost some of these games, if you look specifically at what Kizer did, he still performed very well in those close game situations, right, even though they may have lost. So I think that's pretty telling when you have an opposing head coach who has that kind of thing to say about Deshaun Kizer.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I think, again, when you look at last year, fourth quarter quarterback play, I think could have been a whole lot better. The whole team's play could have been a whole lot better. Let me make sure I say that. But when you go from 68% in the first quarter to 49% in the fourth quarter, that catches my attention. I thought Pro Day was not as accurate as he needed to be. I think he's highly intelligent. I'm still a fan. I still think he's a starting quarterback in the NFL. But I got to look at it from a business perspective. I just can't take him in the first round. He's not a first-round talent. I don't know if any of the quarterbacks this year are a first-round talent. Now, probably one or two teams are going to reach, and they're going to take Mitch Trubisky and maybe somebody else. But I just feel like he's a second-round pick, and somebody in the first 10 picks of the second round will take him, and then he'll start the new process. And once you get drafted, none of this stuff matters, and he can start trying to be the best quarterback he can be. He can try to make a name for himself, and then 10 years from now, someone will compare themselves to Deshaun Kizer in the NFL.
Well, and I guess I should clarify what I was saying. I'm not necessarily saying, and I'm not saying, that right now he's a first-round talent. But because he plays quarterback and because of what's available out there, I think that that plays into it. And again, when you start looking at some of the teams late in the first round, like the Pittsburgh Steelers, even the New Orleans Saints, teams like that where you could very easily see, okay, if these other three quarterbacks are already gone, Trubisky, Watson, and Mahomes, who's the other one? It's slipping my mind right now. But yeah, Mahomes.
Quarterback.
Yeah. Davis Webb.
Yep.
I don't think Davis Webb will go ahead of him, but if those other three are already gone and Deshaun Kizer's sitting there, I think there's a very good chance that he could go because, again, of the commodity that a quarterback is in the NFL.
Round one tonight should be very interesting. It's going to be a lot of chaos in the top 10. Once you get outside the top 15, then there's, I think, a lot of players on the board 15 through 50, 18 through 50. Mike Mayock said today there's not a lot of difference, but probably going to be a lot of movement in the top 10 tonight. And what will the Chicago Bears do? I think they got to go defense, try to rebuild that defense. We'll see how that transpires. Why don't we step aside for a moment so I can take care of my baseball issue?
Okay.
Gosh. And we'll come back and have rapid fire as SportsBeat continues on WSBT. Darren Pritchett in Fort Wayne with the South Bend Cubs. Sean Steyer's back in our WSBT studios. It is time for Rapid Fire.
All right, let's start with this one, Darren. This kind of goes to what we were talking about just a minute ago. Over, under, 3.5 quarterbacks selected in the first round of the draft tonight.
Way under.
Really?
You can't take these quarterbacks in the first round. You're going to get yourself fired. Look at the list of quarterbacks you just gave a few moments ago.
Yeah.
Right? And look at the talent pool we're talking about.
And just for the sake of repeating, Christian Ponder, Jake Locker, even Tim Tebow, I'll throw him in there. Mark Sanchez, Jamarcus Russell, Jason Campbell, all among first-round quarterbacks over the past few years.
You're going to get yourself – well, I'll say this. If you're a GM, you don't have a quarterback, you get fired. If you draft one and it doesn't work out, you get fired. So I know it's a tough business, but, I mean, just look at the talent pool. We're not talking like there's a Jameis Winston and a Marcus Mariota in this draft.
And see, and that's – I thought the same thing last year with the two guys who came out. And I didn't feel like either Goff or Wentz were legitimate – top of the first round type guys. They both went there. Wentz had a little bit better year. The Rams are going to pay the price for it, and they'll probably be picking another quarterback within a year or two.
But at the same time, don't you feel like those two, if they were in this year's class, would be the first two on the board?
I think Wentz would. I don't know about Goff. I don't know. But I think Wentz would.
All right, so I'm going to say under. I can see Trubisky getting taken, and he has some of the fewest starts in the history of the NFL draft for a quarterback that's going to be taken in the first round.
Yeah.
So he's probably going to go, and I'm sure there's probably going to be one or two more, but if it's 3.5, I've got to go under. I just can't believe there's going to be four with the amount of depth that there is in this draft.
I'm going over, especially if Trubisky does go number one, and I know there's been back and forth all day on that, but I just think the earlier in the first round, the earlier the first guy goes, the greater chance that it's going to be over, because NFL executives just lose their mind over quarterbacks, and that's why all these guys that I just rattled off all have gone in the first round before, because they lose their mind, they think they've got to have it, and that's what ends up happening, and that's why it's 50-50. You have just as many busts as you have guys who end up working out.
Okay. I can't wait to see the answer to that question tonight.
I know. We'll find out. We'll all find out relatively soon.
Four? Oh,
playoffs!
You know what? As a Bronco fan that has, well, I don't know if we have great quarterbacks, but we're not going to be taking one, I'm happy because that means more players to choose from, so I hope six get taken.
Well, and even look at last year, what happened with the Broncos and the whole thing, and now he's sitting there on the bench, not doing much of anything.
Oh, it's coming.
All right, question. Patrick asked DeShone Kizer today which Eagles quarterback he plays more similarly to, Randall Cunningham or Donovan McNabb. Kizer didn't answer the question, so which one do you think Kizer is more similar to?
Funny you say that, because in the 5 o'clock hour, I told Eric, the best part of that interview was DeShone didn't answer it.
Exactly.
I think he learned his lesson.
My thoughts exactly. He didn't compare himself to another NFL quarterback.
Yes. I'll just say McNabb, because Cunningham could run around, dance around, stay alive. He was almost like a gymnast out there. McNabb was more of a pocket passer that could run, so I'm going to say Donovan McNabb.
I go the same, because Cunningham, like you said, great athlete. Big speed, cannon arm, the whole thing. Could obviously do a lot with his legs, and he was just so slippery. McNabb, more of a quarterback. I think he's the more cerebral of the two. And he had those shake-and-bake moves in the open field. He wasn't slippery and really speedy like Cunningham, but he had the moves, and he could move in the open field when he needed to. And so I think there's even though they're not – really the same body type and all that, I think there's some similarities in their game anyway. All right, look into your crystal ball, Darren. Okay. Rank your top two potential landing spots for Kizer. And now, keep in mind, this is not best fit for Kizer, just where your gut says he might end up going.
San Francisco or Arizona.
Okay.
San Francisco just loves him too much. All the scouts that were there for the pro day, that's got to be a choice early in the second round. And I think Arizona does not want to fall into the trap. A few years ago, they had Kurt Warner. He retires, and they weren't ready at the quarterback position. Carson Palmer's 38, 1 year left. They want the next guy. So I think they move up in the second round and take DeShone Kizer tonight.
I keep going back, is this Pittsburgh stuff real? Is it some kind of smokescreen that the Steelers are throwing out there? But I look at that one, the Steelers, and then the other one being New Orleans, because the Saints are number 32, and right at the end of the first round, and they also pick at 42. So, and both of them have Ben Roethlisberger's 35, Drew Brees is 38. So I wasn't necessarily going to Kizer's best fit. They would both be good fits because it gives him what he needs and what the team needs, and that's he could sit and learn behind a Hall of Famer for a year or two.
You know, I think back to right after the playoffs, I want to say Ben Roethlisberger came out and said, you know, I don't know if I want to keep playing or not.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know if there was ever a follow-up question asked to Big Ben. If he has thought any more about that, I would assume he's ready to go, or this would be a story by now, especially with the draft coming up. But you know what? That's an interesting spot, Pittsburgh, because if it seemed like Ben has a few years left, but he does get banged up a lot.
Yep.
And if he's thinking about retiring after this season, then you would think the next couple of years, those are things that maybe Big Ben would be talking about. So I really had not thought about Pittsburgh. I like that answer.
Okay. Fill in the blank with this one, Darren. The projected first-round quarterback you have the most doubts about is blank.
Say that one more time. Could you please repeat the question,
yeah, right.
Alex?
Fill in the blank. Okay. The projected first-round quarterback projected to go in the first round that you have the most doubts about, the most reservations about, is who?
All of them. I'm going to be stubborn and bullheaded. But if I have to pick one, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. I'll say this. I think DeShone Watson is an NFL starting quarterback. But what I want to know is, why all the interceptions?
Yeah.
Made a lot of great plays at Clemson. Look at the games he played against Saban and Alabama. That's enough to get you drafted in the first round, to be honest.
That's right.
Because he passed the test in college by playing two great games against the Tide in title games. So I guess I'm just kind of intrigued about Watson. I think he's got the capability to be a good quarterback, but the interceptions really concern me.
To me, it's Mitch Trubisky, and it goes back to something you mentioned just a minute ago. 13 career starts, and I'm just not sold on a guy with a sample size that small, because as we found out with DeShone Kizer, and I've said this before, if Kizer was eligible last year, he would have been sitting there going at the top of the first round, and now he comes back, and everybody is picking him apart. Yeah, he had some ups and downs this season, but it also goes to the fact that when you play an opponent a repeat time from one season to the next, and the more body of work you have out there, the more game film they have to try to actually find flaws and see where they can take advantage of you, mm-hmm. and things like that. So yeah, there's just too much risk, especially with Trubisky being talked about as high as he is, too much risk for teams on a guy who really has never had any true media scrutiny, doesn't have a big body of work. Even DeShone Watson playing in two national championship games and being a Heisman Trophy contender. And then, what you mentioned, Mark Sanchez, 16 college starts before he was drafted in the first round. Ryan Tannehill, 19. Those are the two quarterbacks with the fewest career college starts before they were first-round draft picks. It hasn't necessarily worked out very well for them.
Oof. Mark Sanchez.
Mm-hmm. The Sanchez.
Butt fumble.
That's right. All right.
That might be the greatest highlight in ESPN history, because, man, they ran with that thing for months.
That's true. The butt fumble does have a life of its own.
Oh.
All right, toss up. If you're the Browns, do you draft Myles Garrett or Mitch Trubisky at number one overall tonight?
Do I have to answer that, how grumpy I've been about the quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think I probably know by now it ain't Trubisky, right?
Oh, yeah. I think I'll go with Myles Garrett, because if you feel like there is a guy that can make a difference coming off the edge, you got to take him. If you don't think he's that guy, then don't. Like a Courtney Brown. Remember the Browns drafted out of Penn
State? Right.
I think it was the Browns. So I really think Garrett looks that type of guy. And I really think you can get Trubisky later in the first round.
Well, and I know that like Gruden is starting to pick him. And again, it's probably lucky because Garrett's detractors don't seem to have come until right up before the draft. And Gruden was some stuff from him saying, well, I don't know if he played hard all year. And apparently he had an ankle injury. And so he was actually playing through an injury, and he was still playing very well. And that's who I would go with as well. I do think you also have to take the Browns' history at quarterback that's well-documented. Guys like Tim Couch, Brandon Weeden, Johnny Manziel, all first-round guys. And Weeden and Manziel, first-round just 2 years apart. I think they're much better off going with an impact defensive player first, and then you can still get one of these other quarterbacks with either that second pick or they have a pick right at the beginning of the second round as well, where they could get a quarterback if they want
mm-hmm.
one.
Mm-hmm.
And then even wait till next year if they wanted. Get through this year, build other positions with this draft since they have so many picks, and just wait till next year when the quarterback class is supposed to be even better.
Stronger. That's exactly right.
Yep. All right. Scale of 1 to 10. How much value do you place on a quarterback's win-loss record in college when you're considering his pro potential?
Interesting question. Maybe put a, you know, I would say put a 5 on it, and that's probably a higher number than I expected to say, but at the college level, a quarterback can make a huge difference on a football team.
True.
Brady Quinn made his two junior, senior year teams better than they were. They were not BCS, Fiesta Bowl, Sugar Bowl caliber teams. The defense was not very good. Running game was okay, but I think Quinn put the team on his back and made them a better football team than they were. But I also have to say I don't think it's everything, because look at the defense that DeShone Kizer had playing for him. And
right.
It was on pace to shatter every Notre Dame record at one point. So that's a lot for a quarterback to overcome. But the fourth quarter misses last year is concerning. So I'm just going to put a 5 on that.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit lower. I'm around 2.5, 3. And because really you can look at it on both sides of things. What you were just saying there, there's so much in a football game. There's there's 2/3 of a game that's out of a quarterback's hands. What goes on defense, what goes on special teams, whether it's a missed kick or whatever it happens to be. And you look at a guy like Russell Wilson, he was only 2 games over 500 in his 3 years at North Carolina State, but he's won a Super Bowl. And then you've got guys like Tommy Frazier, T. Martin, Jake Coker, all led teams to national championships in college and all had great college records. But it gets them nowhere in the NFL. So I just, I think that there are some things that come into play when you talk about leading comebacks and just putting a team on your shoulders, like you were saying. But by and large, I just think there's so much in the game overall that's out of a quarterback's hands. He's the only guy besides the head coach who has a one-loss record. And it's just,
mm-hmm.
like I was saying in that David Shaw comment at the top, it's completely, largely out of his hands. Not completely, but largely out of his hands. All right, last one.
Okay.
Fill in the blank. The recently laid off ESPN personality you will miss the most is blank.
I haven't seen the whole list. I think I have noticed most of them. You know, Werder was really good covering the National Football League, covering mm-hmm. the Cowboys for a long time,
yep.
and they brought him as an insider. So he comes to mind. Did Barry Melrose get kept, the NHL guy?
I have not seen his. I've seen some stuff that says their NHL coverage got sacked pretty much, but I haven't seen his name specifically anywhere.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with Werder because I think he was really solid with the NFL.
Yeah, I like Werder a lot as well, and he's one of those guys who was there for a long time. Mine is Jason Stark, though, one of the baseball guys. And really, like, after Peter Gammons, it was Buster Olney, Tim Kirkjian, and Jason Stark as far as the baseball guys. I always liked him, and he would come on Mike and Mike, and he would bring an obscure but really cool trivia question whenever he would come on, and I just thought he always had great information and did a good job. So he's one of the ones that I'll miss the most, I think, as well.
That NBA contract is just destroying them.
Yeah, I think
mean,
so.
They paid so much for that contract, and people, they just aren't into it as much as they thought. And you know what? I'll say this. I used to watch ESPN all the time. I haven't watched them a lot the last 4 or 5 years. I think they've left the sports genre too much, and they've tried to branch out into other areas, and I'm just not interested in that. So when I want baseball, I go to MLB Network. When I want football, I go to NFL Network. So I think the way they've handled, the way they cover sports, it's lost me.
Yeah, and you probably saw this today, but they're cutting back their baseball tonight. It's going to be a one-night-a-week thing, I guess. And they're also, when you talk about MLB Network, they're bringing Intentional Talk that's going to be on ESPN before it's on MLB Network with Chris Rose and Kevin Millar. They're going to bring that over to kind of supplement their baseball coverage since they're cutting back so much of their own.
That's bizarre.
Yep.
Absolutely bizarre. But the industry has changed, and ESPN put a high price on their subscription rate, and a lot of people are just saying no thanks anymore.
Well, and another thing that, and I know it's always easy to beat up on ESPN, but a big part of this, as you know as well, has to do with what's happening in just the overall landscape of cable TV and streaming and all that kind of stuff. They've lost millions of cable subscriptions because fewer and fewer people, especially millennials, are paying for cable. They're going to places like Netflix and Amazon Prime and all that kind of stuff. And that affects them because of the money that they get back from cable companies for being per household charges that they get. So
that's rapid fire. That was good today.
Yeah.
Sorry I was so grumpy and irritated about the quarterbacks.
That's all right.
And you know what? 3 years from now, if like three of these guys turn out to be awesome, you can shove it down my throat.
Yeah, and that's the problem. It's kind of a long game that it takes to find out what these guys actually end up being. And so we kind of have to wait a while. But we'll see. It's going to be interesting to see tonight what ends up happening with all these quarterbacks.
NFL draft tonight in Philadelphia. We'll come back and wrap up Sports Beat next on WSBT. We're good to go for, 30 seconds? Wow. We got all the time in the world to cover everything. Cubs and White Sox are idle today, and they return to action tomorrow. The Cubs will be at Fenway to take on the Red Sox. The White Sox will be at Detroit. Final scores today, Major League Baseball, game one of a doubleheader. St. Louis beat the Blue Jays in 11 innings, 8-4. Nationals over the Rockies, 16-5. Phillies 3, Marlins 2. The Mariners edge the Tigers 2-1. Braves 7, Mets 5. Second inning in Cleveland, Astros and Indians no score. 10th inning in San Francisco, Dodgers and Giants tied at 1. We'll recap the NFL draft tomorrow and reassess where we stand with DeShone Kizer. Sean, thank you. Look forward to it tomorrow.
All right, sounds good. Have a good one tonight.
He's Sean Stiers. I'm Darren Pritchett. Cubs baseball next on WSBT.